Chapter 7.
Maybe it's the way you say my name. Maybe it's the way you play your game. But it's so good. I've never known anybody like you. But it's so good. I've never dreamed of nobody like you.
After his conversation with Delia, Obi-Wan spends a long time meditating. It's nothing new in itself. He regularly meditates. Granted, after decades away from the temple and no further training or support, he doubts it's a level of meditation worthy of a Jedi. He isn't one, though, so a more superficial style of meditation has always suited him well. Yet this time, he actively seeks out a deeper connection to the Force. For the first time, he takes his vision and looks at it with a clearer and more honest point of view, analyzing both the vision and his feelings attached to it, the decisions he's made because of it, and its ever-looming presence. He can't fault himself for the actions he's taken, nor should he. They've built a safer Melodon because of it. But that was then, before he met the clones, before he met Cody. Because the crux of the matter is that he's a hypocrite. That he allows himself to see the clones as a representation of the war, while he knows they're not, they're more than that. For he knows so painfully well that a soldier is more than the blaster he holds, that a war has multiple sides, and that in the long run, almost everyone involved is a victim. That to fight his own thoughts about a man that almost feels like home is perhaps a warped form of self-preservation as well as fear. For what if Cody dies? Yet, therein lies the problem. In the one word that's almost as dangerous as attachment. Fear. He resurfaces from his meditation with a clearer mind and a mission to regain control over himself and let go of the fear that's like a glowing ember hidden in ashes for too long. He starts following the war on the HoloNet. After reading his first few articles and watching some newsreels from the HoloNet News, Obi-Wan spends the rest of the evening meditating to release his flaring anger and bubbling memories into the Force. The second time, he is more mindful of himself. That doesn't make the situation a lot better, it just ensures he's more composed while scouring the HNN for news on the 212th. He isn't going to lie to himself and say he's actually interested in the war, when all he wants to know is how the battalion that saved him is doing. How Cody is doing. But the more he reads and watches, the more he realizes that the HNN's focus is more on our boys in white and their heroics than anything else. Not that there is anything wrong with slivers of hope, but it starts feeling a lot like propaganda rather than an honest depiction of the ongoing war destroying half the galaxy. So, the search for another source is on. It takes a while. Most sources are a big miss, and if he thought the HNN was propaganda, well, there's apparently enough other channels out there to remind him that it can always be worse. The tabloids are also much worse. If they even report on the war at all, it is with screaming headlines and horrible hollows more focused on whether an unnamed clone is having a liaison with a civilian on the planet they just liberated, rather than, well, actual facts. He's about to give up when he comes across a channel that feels more like a personal blog than a news channel. Simple headlines, sometimes only a location even, and almost no formatting to the hololess text published on the channel. Each article reads almost like a diary entry, with locations all over the galaxy covered. With battles all over the galaxy covered, he thinks, and realizes that these could only have been written by someone that was right there on the front. It feels very much like some underground clone channel that Obi-Wan isn't sure if he should have actually found, let alone read. For while none of the articles carry any sort of sensitive information that can't already be read on the HNN, there is a painful vulnerability and intimacy to reading the recollections of war through a soldier's eyes. Nothing is sugarcoated, and while no bad words are written about the Republic, there is a recurring sense of desperation for the fighting to stop, for the war to end. Obi-Wan is painfully familiar with that feeling. Not all the articles make Obi-Wan want to get up and gather the clones in his arms and never let them go again. There are relief missions, sometimes even shore leave, that are covered too, but they are few and far between. But he still doesn't contact Cody, even if the urge is there and grows with each article he reads. Finally, Rowenny gives him a clean bill of health. Once she's signed the last form, she slides the pad to the corner of her desk and grins impishly. "So, now you can finally take me out for that celebratory drink." Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow. "Oh, I'm taking you out?" She waves a hand in the air. "After all the extra work you've caused me, certainly." Obi-Wan chuckles. "Maybe we can arrange something with the others, too. It's been a while since we've all been out." Their outings used to be a lot wilder, with one very memorable trip to Zar where they actually went clubbing. Nowadays, with all of them holding jobs and Sarasi having a family, their monthly nights out aren't quite as extreme. "Just make sure you do it on an evening when I have the next day off," Rowenny laughs. Obi-Wan grins. "They're still a lot of fun, though." That afternoon, Sarasi drops by his office. It's been 3 days since she all but walked out on their discussion, and they haven't spoken since. Now, she stands in the doorway of his office, a cloud of nervousness surrounding her. "I've come with a peace offering." Obi-Wan waves her in. "We're not fighting," he says, because he certainly hasn't been, and he wants her to know that. Sarasi puts the mug down on the desk and sits down in the visitor chair, rolling her eyes. "Because I've avoided you for the past few days," she says, her eyes flickering out the window for a moment before she turns back to Obi-Wan with a sigh. "I overreacted." "Perhaps a little." "It's just that Mylu is worried," she says in explanation. "I should have told Neildon you, but it's so personal for her. And I didn't think it would impact Melodon, just us as a family." She gives Obi-Wan a wry smile. "Our conversation was a bit confrontational." "I get that," Obi-Wan says, because he does, has his own confrontation to deal with, after all, and unlike Sarasi's case, his ignorance is decades old by now. "But you'd be open to talk about it now?" Sarasi raises an eyebrow and gives Obi-Wan a sharp look. "I'd be a horrible leader if I wasn't." "I'm asking as your friend," Obi-Wan says softly, offering a kind and patient smile. Sarasi deflates with a long sigh. "We have to, but that doesn't mean I want to." She shakes her head and avoids looking at Obi-Wan, instead opting to look out the window again. "Mylu asked what we'd do if war broke out on Gaul. Would we help? I don't have the answer to that." "Would we help?" Obi-Wan echoes incredulously. "We're in the middle of building our first refugee center and shelter." Sarasi worries her lip. "What about our neutrality?" Obi-Wan scoffs. "We're not going to Karking war, but I'll be damned if we don't take in refugees, Sarasi." Sarasi flinches. "You're right," she concedes with a sigh. "It's just getting close, you know?" she asks, soft and frail. Obi-Wan stands up and rounds his desk, squatting down next to Sarasi's chair and smiling up at her in an attempt to offer her some comfort. "I know, but just because we're afraid doesn't mean we should lose our compassion." She looks at him in silence for a moment. Then she raises a hand and gently strokes a finger down his cheek, a sad smile on her lips. "You never did," she muses. "Not when you were a boy, and not now. How do you do it? Aren't you scared?" "Of course I am," he says, and then, remembering the advice he is trying to follow himself, adds, "But it's important to let that go. We can achieve more when we don't withdraw into ourselves out of fear." Sarasi huffs with a laugh. "I know it doesn't matter much," she says, and there is pride shining in her eyes, "but I think you would have made a good Jedi." Obi-Wan shakes his head. "With how they've been made to fight in the war, I'm happy I'm not." "Yeah, you're right," Sarasi says with a deep sigh. She rubs her temple. "If we're expecting war on Gaul, we should let the Council know we'll be taking in refugees." "A good idea. they can discuss and prepare, if only mentally, for what potentially is to come. If war breaks out on either Gaul or Zar, they will need help. And while Melodon will never offer to fight, they can offer a different kind of help. "I'll put it on the agenda for our next meeting," Obi-Wan says. A month after he started following the Clone Holonet channel, a new article is posted titled "Darkness on Umbara." There aren't many details on the actual battle, but what is there is nothing but grueling. He sits frozen as he reads phrases such as "unfair treatment of troops," "suicide tactics," and "friendly fire." It reads like a downright nightmare, with a mentioned casualty count that makes Obi-Wan feel sick to his stomach. He lays down his pad with a heavy feeling in his chest and decides to go for a walk to clear his mind, to soak up the comforts of Melodon and the sunshine they've been blessed with despite the crisp cold. He ends up at the flax fields, which in winter are nothing but empty stretches of land waiting for spring, when the new flax will be sown. Then, the fields will be desolate no longer, as new life starts to grow with the passing of winter. A season is just a season, after all, and while it repeats itself, it also means it's temporary. He's always found a silly sense of comfort in the flax fields. But now, with the article on Umbara still fresh in his mind, it just makes him wonder. For he remembers Cody sitting at the back of the mess while the troops drank and Waxer's comment that he doesn't often join. As a superior officer, who can Cody turn to for comfort after battles like this? The Force gives him an encouraging nudge, and Obi-Wan frowns. Should he send something? He certainly remembers the need for kindness and comfort after a hard battle. How Sarasi, Neeld, and Hem had clung to one another on nights like that, with the Force a protective blanket around them. But Cody doesn't have the Force, and he'd mentioned not seeing Rex very often. Obi-Wan hesitates. Would his words of comfort even be welcome? Would that even matter, though? He would be sending a message because he thinks Cody might need someone. If both he and the Force are wrong in that assumption, it's only his pride that'll have gotten hurt. But he should at least try. Offering comfort and kindness doesn't cost a thing after all. He takes his small, handheld comlink and snaps a holo of the flax field in front of him.
It's winter now, so the flax fields are empty and desolate. But winter will pass, as it always does, and the darkness and cold will make way for spring. And in summer, the newly sown fields are transformed into a sea of sky-blue flowers again.
His own silly comfort that he is sharing with Cody, even though the text is rather vague. But Cody has already proven himself to be a smart man. Even if he doesn't quite get it, sending this is better than the alternative, that being, "Heard about Umbara, hope you are fine." He signs the message with his name and sends it to Cody's comm code together with the holo, the Force singing as he does so. 2 days later, Obi-Wan wakes up to a reply from Cody. He's wide awake in an instant and will admit being slightly nervous as he opens it on his comlink. He's been worried about overstepping since the moment he sent the message, and the wait for a reply hasn't helped.
"Thank you. Are those the fields you told us about?"
Obi-Wan is relieved to find that his worries were unfounded, that his message has not deterred Cody, might even have helped. While he's sitting in his kitchen that morning, sipping his morning tea and watching the sun slowly rise with a warm, pleased feeling in his chest, he wonders what to reply. He can simply say yes, answering the question and potentially, possibly, ending the conversation before it even started. Before his conversation with Delia, he'd certainly have told himself that he shouldn't. But now, with Delia's words on his mind and that pleased, warm feeling still in his chest, he admits to himself that he doesn't want to. And so he sends back,
"They are. If you want, I can show you more of Melodon."
Obi-Wan is knee-deep into preparing a holo slide deck for the upcoming council meeting when his comm pings, alerting him to a new message. His concentration is broken in an instant, and he picks up his comm to check the message. To his delight, it's from Cody.
"Anything better than this?"
Cody has sent together with a picture of a stack of pads. Obi-Wan chuckles at the familiar sight and sends back a holo of his own stack that seems to be never-ending.
I have a pile of those, too.
He gets a message back almost straight away.
But a better view. Interesting architecture.
They spend the next 20 minutes talking about Melodon's architecture. Cody admits he doesn't know much about architecture from an artistic point of view, and Obi-Wan assures him that didn't play a big role in their initial design. He explains the history of the buildings, the necessity for quick builds that felt safe at the same time, and how only in the decade afterwards had the city evolved and grown into something more than mere Duracrete blocks. Cody says he understands utility and efficiency over anything else, recalls the sterile white halls on Kamino, and the almost cold hull of the Star Destroyer he now calls home. Eventually, they stray from the topic, Obi-Wan getting perhaps a tad philosophical, as he says home is not a place, it is the people you hold in your heart. Cody, however, is quick to agree.
As long as I have my brothers, any place can be home, even if I wish I could kill them sometimes.
Obi-Wan laughs at the familiar sentiment. Before he can reply, however, Cody's sent another message.
Have to go. Duty calls.
Obi-Wan blinks. For a moment, he'd forgotten that they're both important people with an actual job to do. Cody's, of course, much more dangerous than his. And so, after a moment of hesitation and his heart beating just a tad faster in his chest, Obi-Wan writes back,
"Stay safe." I tried.
He wakes up to the answer 6 worry-filled days later. Everyone has noticed, and Delia has even gone so far as to take him out for coffee to softly and carefully ask him if his commander is fine. Now, Obi-Wan is relieved to find out that he is. Or well, fine is perhaps to be determined, but at least Cody is alive.
"What happened?"
he writes back, and puts his calm down before he can send anything else. He will get a reply when he gets one, and there is no need to send anything else. He's leaning with his hip against the kitchen island, cup of hot tea in his hands, and watching little snowflakes whirl through the air when the reply comes.
"I broke my ankle. It's not too bad, but I ran out of power packs during battle and had to make do."
Obi-Wan thinks back to watching Cody spar on the Maverick. No matter how short it had been, he'd been graceful and the movements seemed effortless. Still, though, that's sparring with another unarmed man, not a Durasteel battle droid trying to blast a hole through your armor.
"How does that even work?" "Spin kick,"
Cody sends back, and Obi-Wan can feel the laughter in that one word, and he doesn't even mind when it's very easy to imagine Cody's handsome face scrunching up in amusement. He is feeling something, all right, but amusement isn't it. Certainly not when he tries to imagine the strength of Cody's legs to be able to criffing spin kick a battle droid and kill it. Is it kill when it's a droid? Deactivate? Destroy? Will his mind not stray on brown skin glistening with water and... He gulps a sip of too hot tea down and pretends it's ice instead. The
"impressive"
he sends back isn't a lie, at least. He is impressed, after all.
"And how is your health?" "Good. Got a clean bill of health, and I've picked up sparring again."
It's been hard work getting back into it after almost a month of not having worked out a single bit. His muscles were tight, and it's been a slow build to avoid overexerting his body. But he's finally getting back into his previous shape.
"You spar? Any expertise?" "Staff. I've practiced since I was young,"
he writes back. Not a lie, but not the full truth either. He is very good with his staff, but only because he's had lightsaber training as a child. He'd picked up a staff a year after they brokered peace for Melodon, unwilling to lose such a valuable art and skill, and unable to completely let go of his past.
"But I can do some hand-to-hand too,"
he adds, before Cody can question him.
"Pity we didn't have a chance to spar on the Maverick."
Obi-Wan chuckles. He's not terrible himself, and apropos of sounding like Jin, the Force does provide. But compared to Cody...
"You'll have to go easy on me. I'm sure you're much better than I will ever be. Something tells me you'll kick my ass with the staff, but I'll be happy to correct your form in hand-to-hand,"
Cody writes, and even without a tone or expression, it's an obvious flirt. Obi-Wan's cheeks are red from more than just the heat of his tea when he replies,
"Looking forward to it."
Messages turn irregular after that. But they don't stop. a slow but steady and endless conversation that Obi-Wan comes to cherish quickly. He tells Cody about going ice skating with Hugo and includes the full story of how he learned to skate and that one year when Neeld thought the ice was thick enough, but it wasn't, and had plunged right into ice-cold water. His coffee dates with Delia, his lunches with Cerasi, and his after-work beers with Neeld. Their evening out with the whole group, the shenanigans, and the resulting hangover the next day. His plants, naming them and sending hollows of them to Cody, even if he leaves out the fact they are Force-sensitive. Although something tells him that if he were to mention it, Cody wouldn't be surprised, seeing how perceptive the man is. In turn, Cody shares what the 212th has been up to, although he does apologize, saying he's far less eloquent and skilled at spinning tales with pretty words the way Obi-Wan is. Obi-Wan disagrees, for there is obvious fondness and aggravation in Cody's tales. The adventures of Boyle and Waxer, who had come so close to dying on Umbara, but had thankfully pulled through and lived to tell the tale, that seem intent to adopt every Tuca and child they find. Cries and Longshot that had a bathroom accident, in the sense that the bathroom in question did double duty as a distillery and almost got blown up. Thumper, whose pauldron now carries an image of golden flax. And Cody himself, who turns out to be a bit of an avid reader, although he hardly has the time for it. But the conversation isn't serious all the time, banter coming quite easily for the both of them. A small jab here.
Better watch yourself when you go partying with your friends. I remember the face you'd made drinking Kryze's moonshine.
And tease there.
Leg day today. Suppose you need to do the extra training after Steady banned you for weeks after that fiasco with your ankle.
They increase as they get to know one another better. And sometimes, one of them feels brave, or hopeful, Obi-Wan supposes it depends on one's point of view, enough to cross that small line separating banter from flirting. When Cody says he does enjoy a good romance novel without any embarrassment, and Obi-Wan replies that he does appreciate a man who is so comfortable in his own sense of romanticism and not afraid to show it. Or when Obi-Wan proclaims he's in desperate need of a shower after a long and intense training session, and Cody remarks that he too enjoys a good shower, one of just a few ways he gets his body to fully relax, and certainly the less active method. More often than not, their conversations leave Obi-Wan with a flutter in his chest and the feeling that he is quite certainly falling deeply for Cody. Obi-Wan is in the kitchen with Neeld, rolling meatballs between the palms of his hands, when his comm pings on the other side of the room where it lays discarded on the couch. "Can you check?" he asks Neeld, holding up his meat and breadcrumb-covered hands. "I'm slightly indisposed." Neeld watches with amusement as a little lump of ground meat falls to the counter with a wettish sound. "You could just clean your hands." "Or you could just check my comm," Obi-Wan says, but Neeld is already on his way to the couch. The comm pings again, and Obi-Wan muses out loud, "Maybe Cerasi's going to be late." Neeld hums in reply. There's a flicker of shock in the Force, gone as quick as it comes, and Obi-Wan glances over his shoulder at Neeld. "Is everything okay?" Neeld looks up from the comm to Obi-Wan with a flash of resignation in his eyes. "All fine," he says, and it's perhaps the most obvious lie he's ever told. He tosses the comm onto the couch and saunters back to the kitchen with a smile on his lips that should probably look pleasant, but is painfully forced. "She'll be here in 10. Obi-Wan frowns. "Neeld, let's crack open some beers, shall we?" Neeld opens the conservator and pulls out two bottles, opening them with practiced ease. He doesn't look at Obi-Wan when he puts one of the bottles down next to the bowl of ground meat. Just because Cerasi's late doesn't mean we have to wait. Stubborn as a falumpaset, Obi-Wan knows there is no getting the answer out of Neeld, and for once, the man's got his shields pulled up high. He turns back to rolling more meatballs with a sigh. 10 minutes later, Cerasi arrives, just as Obi-Wan is washing his hands and the meatballs are sizzling in a pan on the stove. She breezes in with a grin and a foil-wrapped package in her hand, pressing a kiss to Neeld's cheek first and Obi-Wan's second. "Sorry for being late. I did bring rice devli to go with coffee later." "Put it in the conservator for now," Obi-Wan says, drying his hands before giving the pan a little shake, rolling the meatballs around. "Homemade?" Neeld peers over Cerasi's shoulder as she puts the rice devli, a pie with cooked rice and custard porridge filling, in the conservator. Sarasi laughs. By someone, sure. Neild pouts. And I thought you loved us. Enough to buy you one. Sarasi plucks a beer from the conservator before closing it and turning to Neild and Obi-Wan with a grin. Cheers, guys. Are we toasting anything? Obi-Wan gives the pan another shake before picking up his own beer. Good food. Neild, something you want to toast to? Sarasi smirks. Vly, perhaps. On the couch, Obi-Wan's calm pings again. Sarasi looks at him in delight, no doubt a tease on her tongue, because by now everyone has noticed Obi-Wan's found himself a conversation partner. Neild, however, looks resigned again, lips set in a thin line as he raises his bottle at Obi-Wan. I'd propose a toast to Obi-Wan's newfound relationship with Commander Cody. It's a good thing Sarasi wasn't drinking yet. She'd surely have spat out her drink, judging by the shock on her face and her wide eyes. What? Aw, shit, Obi-Wan thinks, as it's now startlingly clear what had bothered Neild before. You know, there could be another man named Cody that I'm exchanging messages with. Who knows? Don't try me, Neild interrupts sharply. Who knows? Obi-Wan repeats and sighs, dragging a hand through his hair. Although you are right, and that isn't the case. Neild vehemently shakes his head and points his bottle at Obi-Wan. I knew it. How? Sarasi exclaims, giving Neild an incredulous look. Neild scoffs. Because Obi-Wan's such a carking romantic, of course he took one look at the man and decided he couldn't leave him well enough alone. Obi-Wan gives his friend a flat look. Surprised you'd know, considering you don't have a romantic bone in your body. Would be better if you didn't either. Guys, Sarasi sighs, calm down. She is taking this a lot better than Obi-Wan was expecting, unlike Neild, who is behaving exactly as Obi-Wan had expected him to upon finding out. Even if the finding out part wasn't actually supposed to be taking place tonight, when Obi-Wan doesn't have a definition yet for this thing between Cody and him. When Obi-Wan is dating the clone commander that'll bring us nothing but grief, Neild demands, not calming down at all. His eyes snap to Obi-Wan, glaring at his friend and pointing his bottle at him accusingly. Don't tell me that's not what you're doing. Kark, he curses, and deflates with a sigh, rubbing his left hand over his buzzed black hair. We were going to tease you so badly about it tonight. Obi-Wan blinks, taken aback at the sudden turn in conversation. Excuse me? Let's go sit on the couch, Sarasi says, a pleading ring to her voice as she starts herding the two to the living room. No need to keep this going right next to the kitchen knives. Obi-Wan gives her an amused look over his shoulder. Afraid we'll kill each other? Sarasi laughs as she sits down on the oversized chair, leaving the couch for Neild and Obi-Wan. Afraid I will kill both of you. I have a child at home, and that's more than enough. Obi-Wan sits down and calls his comm to him with the force from the other side of the couch before Neild can get his hands on it. He doesn't need to look at the screen to know there's messages from Cody waiting. You were going to tease me about the person I've been chatting with, he asks. Neild drops himself down onto the couch, dramatically and ungracefully, his beer sloshing in its bottle. Well, we didn't know it was him. A literal child, Sarasi rolls her eyes. Neild makes a rude gesture, which gets completely ignored. You've been practically glowing for the past few weeks. Of course we were going to tease you, and find out who the lucky person is, Sarasi says softly, her smile kind, but a tad hesitant. Obi-Wan shakes his head. We're not in a relationship. Yet, Neild says. Sarasi sighs. Neild. Neild deflates a bit, the storm that's been gathering around him dissipating a little. You don't have to be in a relationship with him. It's obvious you're happier now than you were a few months ago, Obi. He frowns. But why him? Despite himself, Obi-Wan's lips quirk up and he innocently asks, You really want to know? It's not that he doesn't want to talk about Cody, but as riled up as Neild currently is, it doesn't matter what he will say, so it's better to leave that for another time. Neild looks ready to murder him. That was a serious question. Maybe instead of why him, you can tell us what's changed, Sarasi asks, an attempt at changing the topic and satisfying her curiosity. I know you've met him now, but your vision, I talked with Delia. Neild scoffs. Of course it was Delia. What did she say? Sarasi asks. Obi-Wan looks to his right, out of the window, where over the balcony edge, the lights of Zahava shimmer against the night sky. At the temple, they taught us to be vigilant when it comes to visions. Not to ignore them, but to treat them with caution because they show only potential, not reality. To act upon them as if they are a universal truth is ill-advised. Sarasi's eyebrows shoot up. Delia said that. Obi-Wan chuckles. No, but she reminded me of it. Are you saying you should have ignored the vision? Neild asks with a frown. No, Obi-Wan says with a shake of his head. I mean, technically, the Jedi would disapprove of making decisions based on just a vision, but we built a safer Melodon because of it. I can't regret that. But, Sarasi prods, curiously, yet gently. Obi-Wan strokes a finger down the side of his comlink. For years, he has clung tightly to the vision, but the truth is that whatever happens now isn't the same as what he's seen. Reality is already different. But perhaps it is time for me to let it go. Such convenient timing, Neild snips, but there's no real bite to it. Resignation, perhaps, especially when he sighs, taking a long drink of his beer before muttering, but I suppose you getting in a relationship isn't going to change the galaxy. Not a relationship, Obi-Wan grumbles, although he can't be too annoyed at their misinterpretation. Not when it comes with acceptance, no matter how reluctant it is. Sarasi snorts. Well, why don't you tell us a bit about your not-boyfriend, then? Serious answers only, Obi-Wan, Neild warns with a half-hearted glare. Then he scrunches up his nose. Do you guys smell that? Obi-Wan sniffs, and now that Neild's mentioned it, there is a strong odor that's suddenly wafting through the apartment. It smells like, fuck, the meatballs!
Gaul has started withdrawal negotiations with the Republic. Delia doesn't need to be told twice to get a team of intelligence officers started on collecting every bit of information on the proceedings of those negotiations. At the council meeting 3 days later, she presents their findings. The request for withdrawal actually came days before the news broke, and according to their sources, negotiations have been near constant since then. No details are known, but the Republic must not have achieved their goal of convincing Gaul to stay because they sent a delegation planetside to continue the talks. Unlike the delegation sent to Melodon, however, this one is accompanied by the 501st Battalion. Obi-Wan is not surprised at all that Padme is part of the senatorial delegation. The news of a Gar battalion on Gaul starts a round of outraged chatter around the room. Questions whether this classifies as an invasion, if the Republic is now not a democracy anymore, if they should be afraid of the Republic coming back because they decided that no wasn't an accepted answer after all. In reality, Delia continues, raising her voice and effectively silencing the room, we don't know if this is standard procedure for the Republic or not. Nor do we know whether this will escalate. In the best case, they have sent a battalion for the delegation's protection, considering they're in the middle of a war. In the worst case, it might mean they expect a fight. How big are the odds of the Republic using force to ensure Gaul doesn't leave? Someone asks. Historically speaking, quite low. But a drowning man will clutch at a straw. We just don't know whether the Republic is cautious or desperate, Delia says. Which means it is vital we prepare should the worst-case scenario happen, Obi-Wan adds, taking the opportunity to change the topic before they can derail too much. As agreed during our last meeting, Melodon is willing to take in any refugees hailing from Gaul. To elaborate more on this topic and open the discussion, I give the floor to Minister Vita. Jawo Vita, a green-skinned Twi'lek and Minister of Planetary Affairs, gives a polite nod at Obi-Wan before addressing the room. Thank you, Triumvir Kenobi. As discussed in our last council meeting, I've had a team working on a draft proposal for our refugee policy. I would like to take the time today to share with you the ideas behind the draft, as well as the progress on the emergency housing we've been building. As agreed with the IRCA, we are not expected to start fulfilling our refugee quota until the beginning of next year. This gives us room to offer the space to any refugees from Gaul and the time to discuss the current situation with the IRCA. Now, I would ask that you all turn to page 2 of the document I sent to your pads.
After the long council meeting, Obi-Wan is happy to retreat back to his apartment at the end of the day for a quiet evening. He showers, and after puts on the soft pajamas that Sarasi got him for his last birthday. Soon, it'll be too warm to comfortably wear, but they're only at the beginning of spring now, when the evenings and nights are still cold with frost nipping at the ground. He's heated a bowl of split pea soup, which is slowly cooling on the calf table while he sits on the couch with his feet folded underneath him. Later, he will tend to his plants and perhaps read. Delia has gotten him a trashy romance novel about the secret relationship between a clone and the man he rescued during a campaign. It's very flashy and very spicy, and he's quite certain she'd meant it as a joke, but somehow it's rapidly turning into a guilty pleasure. But for now, he relaxes on the couch with his eyes closed in something that's not quite meditation, but helps him clear his mind. On the calf table, his comm beeps. He opens his eyes and raises his hand to call his comm to him. When he looks at the small screen, Cody's name flashes back at him. He smiles to himself, warmth and relief spreading through his chest, as it always does when he receives a message from Cody. It's been a week since Cody's last message, the man caught in a campaign, and Obi-Wan's been hesitant to send a message and disturb. As always, he feels he can breathe just a bit easier, knowing Cody's made it through yet another day, another fight, another campaign in a war that never seems to end. It's with relief that he now reads,
"Finally got the spa treatment I've been dreaming of, courtesy of 2 weeks in the mud."
If Obi-Wan's found out anything about Cody these past few months, it's that the man has an incredibly dry sense of humor, one that never fails to amuse Obi-Wan.
"I would offer a massage to complete the experience, but technology hasn't come that far yet, unfortunately,"
he writes back.
"Something to dream of for a later time, then."
Cody's reply comes almost straight away. It reads like a promise that settles warm and excited in Obi-Wan's gut. It's something that's come up in conversation multiple times as a throwaway comment or hopeful joke. The chance, the hope, silent and unspoken wish, to meet again. But, Obi-Wan realizes as he looks at the screen, there are other options. And so he asks,
"Are you free to talk? We could have a holo call instead of just chatting." "Yes, I'd like that."
Obi-Wan lets out a breath he hadn't realized he was holding. A minute later, he's collected his handheld holo projector from his office. He places it on the calf table and connects it to his comm before calling Cody. The moment the call connects and Cody appears as a blue holo before him, Obi-Wan's heart stutters in his chest. The chest-up image of Cody in his blacks that looks back at him is even more handsome than he remembers, even in bright holo blue. Kark. He is so completely and utterly gone on this man.
"Seems we both decided to get into something more comfortable,"
Cody says with a grin and a gesture to his blacks. Obi-Wan chuckles. "They finally decided you're only human and needed some downtime as well."
"Never. There's enough flimsy work to last me a lifetime, but our last campaign was..."
For a moment, Cody hesitates.
"Strenuous. Took the opportunity to do some work from the comfort of my bunk."
Obi-Wan hums. "And then I came and offered a distraction."
"Indeed,"
Cody says with a fond smile.
"How's training been going? Any accidents this week?"
A few weeks ago, Obi-Wan had picked up teaching the art of staff fighting again, and he now teaches two classes every Bendu Day morning. A beginning class with mainly children. They use props to practice, though, and while someone does get hit in the head at least once every training session, no harm is done. It is the advanced class that's causing him grief, with the young adults always trying to either impress or upstage their peers. I think after the visit to the emergency room last time, they've learned to hold back a little more. Cody nods in understanding.
"It's the same with the Shinies,"
he says.
"They're always accident-prone the first few weeks. They try to prove themselves. It doesn't always go well."
Obi-Wan hums. "Leaves you wondering if they can be any more stupid," he says, hoping he really doesn't have to find out when it comes to his own students.
"They always can be."
"Oh, I'm sure they can." Obi-Wan laughs and then gives Cody an amused look. "You were once a Shiny too. What did you get up to?"
"Not for long."
Cody shakes his head with a wry smile.
"Alpha didn't give us the chance."
Obi-Wan frowns for a moment, trying to remember where he recognizes that name from. "The commander that was in your room before you." Cody nods.
"He trained us command batches back on Kamino. Downright asshole."
I'll keep that to myself, Obi-Wan promises easily.
Oh, you can tell him that to his face. He'll be proud,
Cody says with a bark of laughter.
Still, he's not the worst trainer out there, and he taught me the skills I have.
Obi-Wan is left wondering what kind of training the clones have had, how they were treated. It doesn't sound like it was good, which just adds another thing to the list of heartaches attached to the troops that fight in the Gar. But Cody doesn't offer any further information, and it certainly isn't his place to ask. So instead, he opts for a tease to lighten the mood and potentially switch the topic. So he's the one that taught you to spin kick droids. Cody smirks.
Says the man that shot down a hyena bomber without being able to even stand.
Like attracts like, Commander.
Is that your way of calling me reckless?
Cody teases, raising an eyebrow. Dedicated, perhaps, Obi-Wan says with a chuckle, before his expression turns serious. I might not know you as well as your brothers do, but you don't seem like the reckless type, not when your men rely on you. On the Hollow, Cody looks surprised. His eyes slightly widen for a moment before a small, grateful smile creeps onto his lips.
Thank you, Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan clears his throat, feeling a blush burn on his cheeks. Speaking of the men, how are they? How is Trapper? He'd heard that Trapper had gotten badly injured and hoped that by now the man was fully recovered. Cody nods, confirming that indeed he has.
Back to normal.
The relief in his eyes is a testament to how much he cares about his men.
They've been asking after you, the men. Seems like you managed to leave quite the impression in the short time you were aboard.
I'm sure I was a novelty, Obi-Wan chuckles. Cody shakes his head with a smile, like there's a whole other reason why the men have decided to like him. He doesn't disclose this to Obi-Wan.
I think Kryze and Longshot have brewed a new concoction especially for you, should we find ourselves in your presence again.
Cody smiles teasingly.
It has a lower alcohol percentage.
Don't let the men hear you say you know about their illegal homebrew, Commander.
Homebrew, they drink right in front of me. They really aren't subtle.
Cody shakes his head.
But as long as it doesn't impact their duties, we'll allow them the comfort.
Silence falls between them for a moment. It isn't uncomfortable. It is the kind of silence where, if they'd been sitting next to one another, Obi-Wan would have put a hand on Cody's knee or shoulder in silent comfort.
Speaking of comforts,
Cody says, picking up the conversation again.
I unfortunately haven't had time to start on the book you recommended.
Obi-Wan doesn't quite remember when he'd recommended Cody read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but it's understandable the man hasn't had the time to read it yet, considering he's been running a campaign from muddy trenches. Obi-Wan glances over to his bookcase, where his own copy of the book stands, and has an idea. If you want, I have a copy right here.
A flimsy copy?
Cody asks, looking excited at the prospect. Obi-Wan gets up to retrieve the book. Yes. There's nothing like reading from a real flimsy book. The feel and smell of the pages, a pad just can't compare. He shows Cody the book when he sits down on the couch again.
I'll take your word for it,
Cody says.
Feel free to read to me if you want. Listening to your voice isn't really a hardship.
Flatterer, Obi-Wan says with a blush. Don't fall asleep on me.
No promises.
Obi-Wan chuckles as he opens the book and starts reading from the first page. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. End of chapter 7.
And I've heard of a love that comes once in a lifetime. And I'm pretty sure that you are that love of mine.